From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Hong Kong police have arrested two prominent pro-democracy activists, Joshua Wong and Agnes Chow, ahead of another weekend's planned activities in the mass movement that has gripped Hong Kong for the past 3 months. Wong and Chow gained fame for the role they played in the 2014 mass uprising that came to be known as the Umbrella Movement exactly 5 years ago this weekend. They were charged with organizing illegal protests and released on bail. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of women and men gathered on Wednesday for a massive rally under the hashtag MeToo banner, claiming that Hong Kong police had sexually assaulted female protesters. The movement that was sparked by a China-backed extradition bill aimed at dissenting Hong Kongers has gone on for longer than anyone expected. China has made verbal threats warning protesters that they would face the armed might of the Chinese military. But Hong Kong's residents have brushed those threats off. Now Chinese troops have moved into Hong Kong, saying it's part of a scheduled troop rotation. We go today to Hong Kong to speak with an academic who's been involved in studying the protest movement. Francis Yip is an associate professor teaching Christian theology at the Divinity School of Chung Chee College in the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Welcome to the program, Francis.
Yeah, hi.
So first, can you tell us about the what it is that has kept these protests sustaining for so long? It's been now going on 3 months that masses of people have been showing up week after week, conducting mass protests on the weekend, and there seems to be no end in sight. And a lot of people are observing this and wondering, how is this being sustained for so long?
I think this, the most important reason is the government's position not to accept any of the demands from the protesters, even a demand for complete withdrawal of the extradition bill is rejected by the chief executive. And also there are other, I think, very reasonable demands, like setting up an independent commission of inquiry into police brutality. This is very, very, very reasonable demand, but the government simply rejects these demands as unacceptable.
What I understand is that the only gesture that Hong Kong's executive Carrie Lam has made to protesters over these months has been to table the extradition bill. She hasn't met their demands, but the furthest she's gone toward what they want is to put the bill on hold. Is that the extent of
it? Right.
The latest that we're hearing is that some of the pro-democracy activists ahead of the weekend's expected general strike or march are now being arrested, among them Joshua Wong. He's a 22-year-old prominent activist. Can you tell us a little bit about him and why he has been arrested?
Joshua Wong and another person, Agnes Chow, are the leader of a very young party made up of very young people that has been in the movement for fighting for more democracy ever since the Umbrella Revolution in 2014. And I think the government would seem to think that these young leaders are still very influential among the protesters. But actually, a key feature of this protest, very different from the 2014 movement, is that there is no leaders, no obvious leaders. I think people just share their views on an online discussion forum, and then those views, those proposals that most popular are put into action. So I think the ethos of this movement is no leaders. So even by arresting the so-called leaders of pro-democracy movement, I think the protests will go on. And on the other hand, that kind of arrest of politicians, young people, would actually provoke more people to be on the side of the pro-democracy movement.
I understand, of course, that China has continued to make a show of force through troop movements. They had been amassing troops near the border, right, including military vehicles, and now there are Chinese troops that have essentially been, the number of troops has increased dramatically, and the sense is that China is trying to send a message ahead of the weekend's events.
Mm-hmm.
Are people taking that seriously?
Not seriously, I think. I think many people, especially those on the front in the protests, would think that not even a military intervention would actually solve the problem, will actually end all protests. China and mainland China and Hong Kong are so different. Even if they use real bullets and machine guns and tanks, I think the protesters will still find ways to express their views, even in this very serious situation. And also, many protesters would think that China would not use military crackdowns such as the Tiananmen in 1989, just because China is in the situation facing too many challenges, even foreign affairs and local economies are not good and so on. If they really use the People's Liberation Army to crack down on the protests, I think there will be international sanctions on the scale that it's even more serious than 1989 Tiananmen.
Who do Hong Kong's police answer to? There have been, as you mentioned, calls to hold Hong Kong police accountable. About a week ago, we saw the use of water cannons on protesters, and police even fired a gunshot. And there have been numerous documented instances of pretty severe police brutality. Do Hong Kong police answer to the local government or to China?
That's a very good question. According to law, of course, they are answerable to the local government. But in recent cases, it seems that even Carrie Lam, the chief executive, are quite aware that the police seems to be a force that is not in complete control under the Hong Kong SAR government. That's why one of the reasons the Carrie Lam rejects the proposal to set up an independent commission is because some of the police or many people in the police force object to setting up this commission. So there are some rumors that the police in Hong Kong are actually under not the control but at least the serious influence from China Liaison Office in Hong Kong, which is the representative of the Communist Party in Beijing.
What is the use of, or how tactical is the use of non-violence versus violence among the protesters in Hong Kong? We've been talking about how this is a mass movement. It's a largely leaderless movement of people organizing online, young, well-educated, frustrated people. Is there a stated commitment to nonviolence, or are there groups that have essentially reacted with anger and violence and engaged in property damage to make a point?
I think it. This movement, from day one, the two groups, those who are very peaceful, who reject violence, and another group of people that would use violence if necessary, those two groups are in a kind of a tactical union, because they have been there have been many quarrels and arguments between these groups since 2014. But at this stage, they think that they should be in kind of a tactical agreement. They should move together for fighting for more democracy. So they really would not blame the other for doing something that they do not allow. For the peaceful group, that they can draw the attention of many people, such as the several marches that has at least drew 1 million or even 2 million Hong Kong people on the street. And this, I think, it represents a very large amount of people in Hong Kong.
Right, we're talking about 2 million out of 7 million, which is a huge percentage.
Right, right. It's, I think, unprecedented in Hong Kong.
And possibly in many other parts of the world. I understand that just this week, there were thousands of women who participated in Hong Kong in a march against sexual violence by police during these demonstrations, and that they have now seen themselves as part of the global hashtag MeToo movement.
There are reported cases of police using means to, that against women, such as complete strip search for no reason, and those and other actions during arrest that does not recognize the dignity of female bodies. That and the rally, the assembly that draws many people. Is because of that, it is quite widespread nowadays. So why it is related to the hashtag MeToo movement is that I think the violence against women and violence against pro-democracy demonstrators are rooted in a kind of asymmetrical power relation, and in that kind of power relation, men dominated the scene.
I want to turn to some of the media coverage of the Hong Kong protests among the U.S. left media. And I think you've seen one particular article that has been making the rounds on a website called grayzone.org by thegrayzone.org by a journalist named Dan Cohen, who, among the things that he says, writes, since March, raucous protests have gripped Hong Kong. In July and August, these demonstrations transformed into ugly displays of xenophobia and mob violence. And what Cohen writes about is that in addition to figures like Joshua Wong, whom we spoke about earlier, he critiques Jimmy Lai, who is a essentially a media mogul who heads the opposition media outlet and who Dan Cohen criticizes for having met with Trump administration officials like State Secretary Mike Pompeo, National Security Advisor John Bolton, and even Vice President Mike Pence, suggesting that the U.S. might be fueling some of the anti-China sentiment among Hong Kong's protesters. How do you respond to this coverage?
I was appalled in reading this article. I think this has misunderstood the whole movement. First of all, there's no xenophobic elements in the movement. Of course, there is a wide spectrum among the protesters. Some might be quite on the left side of the political spectrum. Some might be on the right side, which is emphasizing the unique identity of Hong Kong. Some might even call for more a very high degree of autonomy from China. They are not that kind of far right people like the white supremacists in the United States. The issue why some of the peoples, just like Jimmy Lai approaches Donald Trump and its administration, is simply that Donald Trump is the president at present of the United States. So if the president is now another people, another person, the protesters and those who are concerned about Hong Kong will also approach them. That has nothing to do with the political inclination of the of Donald Trump or other people in his administration.
Is it possible that the Trump administration is interested in the Hong Kong protests because Trump is involved in a political and economic battle with China?
Yes, certainly. And I think some of those who want to voice out the concern to Trump recognize that and try to seize this opportunity.
One of the other aspects that Dan Cohen points out in his article is the visit by far-right white supremacist organizer Joey Gibson at the Hong Kong protests, and some of the slogans that you see in the far right, as well as just some of the kinds of symbolism and icons that you see, Pepe the Frog, etc., that white supremacist organizations in the U.S. put on their flags and their signs and their T-shirts. What do you make of this? I mean, does the visit by one person to a protest taint that protest?
Obviously not. There are many visits by people from all around the world. I don't think just one or two or even a delegation would be a significant influence on the protest. And I have been in Hong Kong for during these times, I do not see any of those white supremacist elements that or something similar that's occurring in Hong Kong. As for the icon, the Pepe the Frog, I think this is a kind of a cultural difference. In Hong Kong, that figure does not have any kind of association with white supremacist or far right or any kind of hate crime that directed against those they don't like. I think that many people in Hong Kong do not understand this, so they would use that icon for their own protests. And actually, I think the designer, the author of this icon, actually recognize that or he is comforted by the fact that this icon, this cartoon, has been used in a more positive way by Hong Kong people.
Now, what is the ultimate ask by the protesters in Hong Kong if this is a very large, somewhat leaderless movement that does span a spectrum of views that has been triggered into action by the extradition law? Is there a set of demands that people have united around, including greater police accountability or even some limits on China's authority to over Hong Kong?
I think the common denominator for all those people participating in protests is that China should at least recognize her promise in the Sino-British Joint Declaration and also what is written on the Basic Law of Hong Kong, which promises Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy and promises that Hong Kong, the legislature and the chief executive of Hong Kong would at the end be elected by universal suffrage. I think this is what people are concerned about. Those unreasonable action by the government and also by the police force actually are symptoms of that undemocratic political system in Hong Kong nowadays.
Going back to the some of the left media coverage here in the United States of the Hong Kong protests, do you see echoes of Chinese propaganda? And how has China used its reach and its ability to control the spread of information to kind kind of influence the narrative around the Hong Kong protests?
For the Gray Zone article, the criticism of a few leaders such as Jimmy Lai, Joshua Wong, and a few politicians, that kind of tactics, name-calling tactics, has been used by Chinese media. They still think that there are some important significant leaders behind the movement. They would not accept the fact that it is quite leaderless in essence. So I think some of the media in the United States might be influenced by that, but I have no evidence of that. But but China has been quite active in influencing public opinion through all kinds of propaganda, through, for example, fake accounts in Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, and so on. So, and in recent days, as you can see, those media groups has already taken out fake accounts, probably of Chinese origin. I think, and this is that kind of pro-China or even those who are propaganda that's initiated by China has been quite influential in Hong Kong.
We heard the Wall Street Journal recently reported that mainland Chinese are sneaking into Hong Kong's protests to support the cause, and that some from mainland China are, joining in the fight and seeing how Hong Kong's protests are being conducted and taking advantage of the freedoms in Hong Kong that are unavailable to them. How, as far as you know, are mainland Chinese viewing what's happening in Hong Kong, assuming that they're even getting accurate information?
It's hard to tell because I don't think people in mainland China can get accurate information about Hong Kong. If they can get quite accurate information, and there are some confirmed rumors about mainland Chinese observing those protests in Hong Kong, I think they will support them, and they think that Hong Kong people are so brave. They are doing what they do not dare to do in mainland China. But on the other hand, I think perhaps the majority of people in mainland China are suspicious of the attempts of Hong Kong people. Some are suspicious because they think that, the Communist Party is so powerful, the military is so powerful, that any kind of resistance would be futile. And other groups might even side with the propaganda of the Communist Party, thinking that those Hong Kong people are not patriotic. They just want to disrupt the peace of the country. They may want to go independent.
And of course, I imagine that the big fear among Chinese authorities is that Hong Kong's demands for greater democracy, greater autonomy, greater government accountability may spread to not just places like Taiwan, but also mainland China itself, right?
That's right. Right. And that's why there are reports about increasing border control. There are many people that in Hong Kong that needs to go back to mainland China for work or for study and for conferences and so on. And there are very tight control at the border involving the checking of someone's social media accounts and all kind of questioning so that those who have photographs or videos about the protests would be asked to delete them before going inside mainland China.
Well, Francis, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Can you recommend any sources of information for Americans to follow who want to understand what's happening in Hong Kong and keep track of what's really happening on the ground?
There are quite a number of pages on Facebook, but I think the Hong Kong Free Press, that's kind of a non-profit online newspaper, would be helpful. And also the South China Morning Post would contain some useful information, but beware of it that this is owned by the owner of Alibaba.
Ah, okay. So take it with a grain of salt.
But it has been quite professional in its reports. So I think we can still rely on their reports.
Well, thank you for those recommendations. Francis, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us and giving us a glimpse into what's happening inside Hong Kong.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Francis Yip, Associate Professor teaching Christian Theology at the Divinity School of Chung Chee College in the Chinese University of Hong Kong, joining us from Hong Kong, and we've been discussing the latest situation there. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.